Olá, pessoal! Para você que está acessando esse episódio, nós temos uma novidade para o seu 2023. Nós estamos muito felizes em fazer o lançamento do MeTime Engage, o primeiro evento presencial da MeTime. Ele vai ser um evento de um dia focado em insights sobre sales engagement e vendas, distribuído em palestras e painéis com mais de 10 especialistas na área. O nosso objetivo com o MeTime Engage é entregar conteúdo de altíssima qualidade para SDRs, vendedores e lideranças comerciais. O MeTime Engage vai acontecer em São Paulo no dia 4 de julho, no Teatro Santander. Para você saber mais, acessa metime.com.br/engage. Um até logo, eu te espero em São Paulo. Tenha um ótimo episódio. Um abraço. Olá, pessoal, tá no ar mais um episódio do Cast for Closer, seu podcast para dominar inside sales e colocar suas metas no bolso. Para você que nos ouve pela primeira vez, esse podcast é feito pela MeTime, referência brasileira em inside sales. O software da MeTime organiza a prospecção dos seus SDRs para que a sua empresa gere mais oportunidades comerciais, mais pipeline de vendas. Para saber, para conhecer o software, acessa metime.com.br. Para você que nos ouve há bastante tempo, a gente está com uma novidade agora em 2022. O Spotify permite que você avalie com estrelas seus podcasts favoritos. Então basta clicar na logo do Cast for Closers dentro do aplicativo, no seu celular, isso não vale para o desktop. Você vai ver uma estrela ali abaixo da logo do Cast for Closers, você clica e avalia. Isso faz com que a gente automaticamente cresça e entregue o show a muito mais gente. O episódio de hoje é muito especial. Na semana de aniversário de 6 anos do Cast for Closers, nós trouxemos um velho amigo para falar de gestão de orçamento para times comerciais. Nosso convidado esteve aqui 2 outras vezes e nós conversaremos em inglês. Então essa introdução em português é para garantir que você ouça e acompanhe o episódio. Se você não domina o inglês, a gente vai transmitir e vai passar esse episódio no YouTube com legenda. Então basta acessar o link nessa descrição. So, now in English, this is a very special episode for us and a much more special guest. He's part of our history, a significant part of our mentors and our close friends. In our anniversary week, celebrating 6 years of broadcast, the best guest for you, and opening our 7th season to talk about budget management for sales teams, we are so happy to have here for the 3rd time Matt Doyon. He's Chief Revenue Officer at Rock Content. Matt, Cast for Closers number 3 for you. They say the 3rd is a charm. How are you?
Yeah, great. It's great to be back a 3rd time. Glad I haven't worn out my welcome. Let's make sure we make it a 3rd the best time.
Yes, yes. Last time we were joking about bringing you every 4 years, so it's been only 2 since you got here for the last time, so we're getting there.
Well, I'm getting older, Diego, so, you know, we're running out of some topics here, I think. You know, we're getting into budgeting now, and I think next one is going to be, what do salespeople look like at the point of retirement? You know, how do you prepare to ride off into the sunset?
Yes, yes. So we're getting old and still discovering new topics to cover here, so that's fantastic, and it's a fantastic thing to have you here to cover budget management. So, Matt, we have all shapes and sizes of companies listening to this show, and I want to start small. Right. In the very beginning, you just want your first clients and maybe your first sales rep. And staying alive is all that matters. And I can remember MeTime's days of that. So my very first question is, when and why a sales leader should start worrying about assembling a budget?
Yeah, this is one that I wish I had spent a lot more time on than I had in the early days with Rock. And yes. If I could go back again, would have certainly wanted to dig into it more. I think founders are a lot better at this than external sales leaders that are brought into the organization, because the founders are right there with the capital. They yes. see what the bank account is. They see what the balance is, and they know how much is there. They're staying on top of runway. They're staying on top of cash balance. So if you're not a founder and you're not really hands-on with that, it is really, really going to be to your advantage to start learning that for a couple reasons. One, if you're selling business to business, you should fundamentally know your own business first. It's going to be a great education for you to get into the details of every area of your business and how it runs on that financial operating system. And then secondly, like anything in sales, you're asking for money for something. And in sales leadership, it's no different. You just end up selling internally. So you're yes. going to have to ask for money for stuff. And it might be a little easier to do that internally because you have all the data, you are part of the team, you know what the operating system is, you can get a meeting with the decision maker, hopefully, which is a little different than an external sale, but it's still a sale. You have to justify the investment, you have to tell a great story, and every dollar or real that's spent on something is a dollar or real that's not spent doing something else. There's always opportunity cost. That money just doesn't sit in the bank usually.
Yes.
So you have to understand what the sacrifices are. And unless you really start thinking about budgeting early, you're not really going to be able to tell that effective story.
Listening to you talking, it all started here for me, Tam, with you just said unit economics. I think 6 to 12 months after foundation, we started thinking, how many leads do we need to hit next year's goal? How many reps would we need? Do we have enough money to pay for all that? And this is a very sensitive topic. And as you should expect, Matt, we started with an undersized marketing team. So my first warning and caution here for our listeners, you should start aligning marketing and sales budgets so your marketing team doesn't bleed. The quality of the leads doesn't consequentially bleed also.
Yeah. And obviously sales is bringing in the revenue.
Yes.
And there's a lot of money going out. And in the early days, most businesses do not have an unlimited supply of cash, right?
Right.
I remember at Rock, we always budgeted against worst case scenario. And worst case scenario was we could be out of business in 6 months.
Yes.
And thinking, okay, if there's this nightmare scenario and we don't have enough money to keep the lights on 6 months from now, how is that informing our decision making on what's really essential to invest in today? And that's really what you have to do. It's how you have to look at those decisions, because every hire, every software, every event, whatever it is, it's so critical to the success or potential failure of the business in those early days. So you really put them under a microscope.
Yeah, for sure. Everything can be decisive. Matt, there comes a time during that initial traction, I mean, between 30 and 50 people, when we listen from our CEO, stop asking me how much do I have and start asking me for how much you need. And this also happened for me time. And not every sales leader is ready to do that. So at that initial traction, when you do worry about how much money you ask, because there's a little buffer that you can ask more, how do we translate our goals into a what I call medium-sized budget?
Yeah, and there's a key element that I see missing in a lot of those conversations. So first thing, what you were referencing is absolutely right. That's part of the evolution of a business as it scales. CEOs get too busy to get really hands-on with everything. They have to delegate, and as part of that delegation, they have to have the plan be written by the leader that they've delegated it to, and the CEO needs to play editor-in-chief. So they want to see that plan written out and have really sound logic behind why it was written the way it was written, what the justification is, and then they'll come in with some analysis, hopefully some great provocative questions to challenge some assumptions if they're there, and really justify where to spend and why. But the missing ingredient I've seen in those is for how long, and it really takes into account total investment cost. So if we tend to look at things like a snapshot, only 1 month, 1 quarter, 1 semester, for a lot of businesses, that's not a lot of time. And a lot of the investments that we make in sales, you go into debt, you go into the red for quite some time before you recover with hiring a new salesperson or implementing a new technological investment. And you have to really take into account that total cost of the investment for as long as you're going to have it before you start to recover and see the benefit. If you don't really map out the full total cost of what you're really asking for, then that can really submarine you on future conversations, because you could come back 6 months later and everybody is looking for the big return, where it's going to take a year or 18 months maybe to see the full impact on the return from that investment. So really looking at those bigger budgets as you start to scale, from not just what's the investment, why is it important now, what does it mean if we have it, what if we don't, but how long are we going to need this investment, and what is the full story as it gets played out over time?
It's fantastic you mentioned this, because the projects are getting bigger, the budgets also, and we are talking here about consequences. Will the close rate diminish and hurt our cash flow? So we're talking about how much long do we need from that investment to recover? I think it's that.
Exactly right. And what sales leaders really need to look at this like is a sale that they're going to need to keep making internally again and again.
Okay.
Because the budget is a living, breathing, moving thing. And as the budget is the foundation of the business, it will change as the business changes. If the business is hopefully growing, your budget's going to grow. If the business should unfortunately contract, the budget's going to have to reflect that as well. And you need to have the resources available to do the job that you want to do. So you're always balancing resourcefulness with the resources that you're asking for. And you want to get those resources that you believe you're going to need to effectively do your job. So having that conversation and having your data, having the numbers, having the business plan mapped out, it's just a sale. That's all it is.
Yes.
You got to look at it that way and have your stuff together. Be prepared to have that very data-driven conversation with a very driver, results-oriented CEO, because almost all of them are very driver, results-oriented, fast-moving, bottom-line people. Be ready to make that sale and have your business plan tightened up.
Yes, yes. It always sounds like a business plan sold internally. So, Matt, and there's also a time, my third question, when the company and its budget gets even more complex, around 100 or plus people. So we need to budget considering pods, different sales teams, ops and support teams, technologies, events, team building, and everything that goes with it. So my question is, how does usually a budget grow in size and complexity in this phase, and how do we adapt to that?
Advice there is to really itemize out as much as you can by business unit. So this has happened at Rock over the years. We were just one company in one geography doing one thing 7 years ago. And now we're in multi geographies with different business models, selling different things. And very importantly, at different stages of their evolution, which goes back to that how long you need the investment piece.
Yes.
Where there are some businesses, you know, we have a small business unit in Brazil, which is very highly evolved, and it gets a return on investment very quickly, which is great. But that operating system is very different than, say, the less evolved US enterprise business that we have right now, which takes a lot longer to see a return on that investment. And dollar for dollar, the investment is bigger. So you really have to look at each of those scenarios under themselves and break out sub-budgets and really understand what are the differences in this one team, this one investment, this one geography, wherever it is. If it's an experiment that you're running, run the experiment on its own and be able to look at the cost and the return and the benefit from that experiment by itself. Sometimes the more evolved, mature teams are subsidizing losses in other teams that are far less evolved, but the investment makes sense. So again, you have to look at each of those business cases, not lumped together in a total global budget where the meaning might get lost. But if the numbers don't look good early on an investment in a certain team, understand why, and if it makes sense to continue that investment, or if they're looking great in another team, you don't just want to throw money into sales globally if one team is carrying the load. If one team is doing great and the economics look great, you want to localize your investment and maybe just invest in that one team and play that hot hand a lot more, because that's the one team that you're seeing the real advantage with. So you have to have the clarity of knowing what's winning, what's working, what's not working, and be effective with every dollar spent.
The thing that stuck in my head as you were mentioning Rock's stage was the complexity and the maturity of the solutions and the markets. We visit Rock Content at 2017, and there was already a mature SMB sales. So I can imagine how mature it is right now, years after. And you mentioned a less evolved US enterprise operation. So for companies at this stage, it's important to look how mature are the process, if there is an area offsetting the other, so you can experiment. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, and hey, I can't complain. It's great to be the sales guy at Rock. Our yes. marketing team crushes it, so they're already starting to dominate the U.S. market and get plenty of organic traffic, and the conversions are coming in. So just like it's always been at Rock, it's a fortunate job to have, being the guy that just gets to handle all the inbound volume that we get. So no complaints, but you have to really look at each team for what it is and the different sales cycles and the margins, if they're different, and how yes. much a sales hire costs against the budget, and really make those decisions with the not only the buy-in from the executive team, but the logic that it's the best thing for the business. If you're going to go into the red and take losses in investing in a team to grow in the future, you could do that as long as you have a compelling case and it makes sense. But you better be ready to prove it. And just like any sale, think about what the other side is going to argue. Think about the objections. Think about the why nots, and have some really, really strong, compelling evidence to forward your belief in your position that what you want to do with budget is the right thing for the business in the long run.
Yes, yes. And Matt, since we touched Rock Content Stage, my very next question is, there's an even more complicated scenario that you guys are probably in right now, when you have historical data and the leaders are measured up against budget accuracy. So yep. at the size and complexity where you're at, like, what is important now in your budgeting process that we could learn from?
Yeah, so it's a great question. And, you know, part of scale sometimes means more investors, which is great. Yes. They have confidence in your business, they're putting money in, but they also want to see what's going on, and you want to be accurate, and they want to know ahead of time how it's looking quarter over quarter. And that's what board meetings are for, partly. And the CEO is on the hook to deliver accurate forecasting. That means sales is responsible to the CEO in that regards. So yeah, as far as just those conversations with investors, we want to be clear that we have a predictable engine that we're running here, and we are going to deliver what we say we will deliver. Yes. It's just part of the confidence that investors want to have that we've got our shit figured out, right? We know what we're doing. We have a system in place. It's measurable and it's predictable, and we're not having these wild peaks and valleys throughout. We have control over the system. And I think that's really what investors care the most about when they're talking to the CEO and they're having the board meetings. Do you guys have control over this thing? Do you know what's going on? Do you know how to pull certain levers to get to where you need to go? Or do you not even understand your own business to the point where you're going to say one thing and something else happens? So it's a confidence piece. It's a trust piece to be able to measurably put that number and hit it within a very small variance when you're talking to investors. It's not so much the revenue coming in or the cash flows. Those are important, but it's more, does this team understand their business and really how it operates to know a little ways out what does that future hold? So that's one piece in terms of accurate forecasting at scale. You need to own up to the investors, the people that have a financial interest in your business. But also more practically in terms of the operating system of the business, a lot of decisions internally need to be made from other teams based on what sales is going to do. How is marketing going to adjust their investment based on sales performance? If you can get ahead of that and project that sales is going to deliver maybe 10, 20, 30% above what they thought based on some investment that was made, then marketing can invest even more. And that virtuous cycle of more marketing with winning recipes, delivering more opportunities and sales selling more, you can keep that going. So you want to have that predictability there to report back up the funnel to marketing. And maybe even more importantly, predictable reporting down funnel, meaning yes. if you're going to sell a lot of clients and you can get ahead of that, you need to make sure your delivery systems are ready. So whether it's onboarding, customer success, support, product, service delivery, whatever your business is, you're delivering something to a customer. And if you're selling more, you want to let those downstream systems know that there's more business coming and there's yes. going to be a big wave that's going to break. Prepare for it, get ready, move schedules around, hire more. Even something as simple as monitoring the vacation calendar in the existing team. Hey, we're going to have a lot of clients onboarding in 6 weeks. Please let us know and adjust your vacation agendas. Make sure that we have bandwidth there. So certain things like that, decisions that are made in other areas of the business, depend on what's coming. You don't want to surprise anybody. You don't want to surprise investors. You don't want to surprise onboarding. You don't want to surprise support, customer success. It doesn't do anyone good. And especially for customer service, meaning the service that the customer is actually getting, not just the business unit inside, you want your customers to get excellent service. So if you can prepare those teams ahead of time, it's only going to be in the best interest of the customer and your business to do that effectively. And obviously, those are the positive scenarios. In downturns, if you're going to miss, you really don't want to be surprised missing. You don't want to have your CEO surprised that there's a miss. The board doesn't want to hear a surprise miss. If you're going to miss downstream, they're going to want to know that for bandwidth issues. There's a lot that's going on there. So you always want to be as zeroed in to an accurate number with as little variance as possible, positive or negative, when you're starting to look at that forecasting. It's not always easy in the early days. Over time, as you start to look at the influencers and the drivers of the outcomes, it starts to become a bit more clear as you look at what those inputs are that lead to the eventual outputs, sales process stages, sales cycles, things like that.
The company becomes more predictable and a quarter starts to look more equal to the last one, and the numbers are more predictable. Matt, as you were talking about investors, accuracy, no surprises at losses or wins, there's a why I did even brought this subject. There's a discipline for asking money and get things done. So from the CEO who reports to the board, asks for money and delivers, to a sales or a marketing leader who asks for money and deliver projects, the whole company has to be that discipline that you ask for money, you deliver your projects, you impact the client. So we're missing on this. Netflix, I was reading the book about the Netflix culture. So they have this analogy for its leaders that the work is like a poker game. I don't expect you to play every hand. You don't have to win every hand you're in, but I expect you win more than you lose by the year. So as you were speaking, as you were talking about budgeting, the accuracy for the investors, I remembered that analogy that the CEO and every person in the organization has some chips, and the investors, they expect your amount of chips to grow and not just like win every hand. So this is a fantastic topic to cover because it shows so much of other abilities from a leader to deliver value through the organization.
Yeah, and investors get it. I mean, they run their own businesses that way. Yes. They do a lot of due diligence. They look at a lot of businesses. And then out of every three they invest in, they expect two to fail. They get it. They're just going to win that third one overwhelmingly. So they keep their chips on the table and keep that pile growing, right? So they understand making bets that don't yield positive returns and then you scrap it and go somewhere else. You just need that bottom line number, the net number, to continue to grow, because that's how they run their business. So they can understand it. If you come to those conversations not knowing, though, not understanding, not knowing how to pick a winner, not knowing what to look at to know whether or not this investment really has a sound shot, it should be one of the three that's going to win, and I only need to win one of the three, but here's why. And if it loses and it doesn't pay off, understanding why that happened and what to learn from it, that's what they want to hear. They don't expect you to win everything.
So to wrap it up, Matt, the first rule we hear from our finance team is that you don't touch your budget after it's defined. And this is considered like a sacred rule. It follows you through the history of the company. Once the budget is decided, we cannot touch it. We have to adjust within. And so since there's always an X factor and uncertainties involving the future, how do we accommodate changes in the strategy to fit the budget?
Yeah. So, I mean, finance is absolutely right in saying that, right? They need to be the gatekeepers and the stewards of consistency. they can't have some fly-by-night process where the budget is constantly changing, constantly being reworked. There are no controls. That does not lead to that predictable system that everybody wants. However, we all know that in the real world, that just doesn't stay true. Sometimes when, if the business stays flat and everything hits the forecasted numbers exactly as planned against budget, yeah, there probably won't be many changes within the budget. Maybe you move money around inside that budget, but the total number will stay. But what often happens is either a business does better or does worse than what they projected. And if you do better, oftentimes you want to keep playing that hot hand. You want to make more investments. You want to keep growing. So if you've put up the great results, why stay conservative? Why not continue to bet? Make some small adjustments to get a bit more aggressive, experiment in certain areas. I mean, if marketing and sales are crushing it ahead of budget with their current investment, why wouldn't you want to invest more? So as long as you have the numbers there and you could tell that story, it's great. And we all know that it works in the other direction. You know, maybe there's a crisis, something happens in the economy. We all saw that 2 years ago at the onset of COVID. You have to look at the real world and what the performance has actually delivered. And sometimes the budgets need to be drawn back. Yes. And again, this is where the downstream effects and upstream effects come in and why sales is so important to an organization. If sales doesn't deliver, marketing isn't justified. You know, their budget is not justified because it didn't deliver revenue. So they're going to get budget cuts if sales doesn't do its job. If sales doesn't do its job and you're not selling enough, the support teams, the delivery teams, customer success teams, what are they for the business? They're not needed in such great numbers. That budget isn't justified because you haven't sold enough. So there's a lot of weight on the shoulders of sales to deliver, not just for the customer, but for every other employee in the business. They're counting on sales to do its job. Otherwise, the whole business could contract and nobody wants that.
Yes, it makes total sense. Maybe that's why we carry so much responsibility within sales teams to be the velocity, to reflect the velocity that company is growing. It depends on sales. And wow, that it's been a fantastic episode, Matt. I learned a
lot.
Actually,
let's not leave it at that. That's a pretty dour message, right? That's a dour. I don't want to leave it on, hey, yeah, the business contracts. The positive side is sales can be the growth engine, the oxygen that's breathed into a business, right?
Right.
We can help everybody else advance their teams, their careers, grow rapidly. And they can buy into helping sales really well also because their success is locked at the hip with sales success, whether they're in marketing or HR or finance or support, wherever, product. So when sales is running well and the system is built to perform at an optimal level, everyone can win. So that's what organizations should be really focusing on, those synergies across the board, because that's what's bringing in the money.
And that's, Matt, why you are you. I always listen to your talks. There's always a bright side. There's always a silver line. And thank you already for that, for our episode, for this last message to sales teams to uplift their spirits. And Matt, it means a lot for us to have you here for the third time for a sixth anniversary episode. It means a lot again. So please feel free to say a few words to say goodbye to the audience. And we expect to have you here. And I didn't forget, in Portuguese.
Wow, this is my favorite podcast. So the guests that you have had over these 7 years have been fantastic. I know many of them. I've gotten to work with a handful of them as well.
Yes.
Always great content, always great learnings from it. Keep it going. I can't wait to see what the next 7 years look like.
Thanks a lot, man. And for you that listened to us through this whole episode, thanks a lot. Don't forget to subscribe and don't forget to support us with your evaluation on Spotify. We say thank you and until the next episode. Bye-bye.
Até logo.
Até logo.